We almost got a new student tonight. Sunday morning, Mr. Quigley told me he wanted to come to our class. And Mrs. Quigley said no. But bless his heart, he's 91 years old and he's never had a credit card before. And he said he's owned three houses over the years and he never had a mortgage. So he's probably the one who needs to be teaching this class. Okay, let's start with some scriptures. If you will turn to lesson four, you should have picked up lessons five and six. Lesson four on the first page, page 32. We're going to read Proverbs 27, verses 23 and 24. Who has that? Okay. All right, and the next passage is on page 33, the next page, and that's Proverbs 21:20. Who has that one?
In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all
he has. Okay, and then turn the page. On page 34, we're going to read Proverbs 13:11. He who gathers money little by little makes it grow. Okay, tonight our lesson is on investing. You're going to hear, if you look at the board, you're going to hear a lot of facts and figures and a lot of my personal opinions too. I don't want to tell anybody what to do, so don't ever get the idea that I'm telling you what to do, because everyone is unique. Everyone's different, and what works for one may not work for another person. My goal tonight is what I'd like to do is to get you to think out of the box a little bit. And what we have traditionally considered safe, let's sort of rethink that and think about what is truly a safe investment and what is not a safe investment. I thought we'd start with a formula. This is not in your lesson tonight. It's probably going to be in lesson eight on budgeting. But this formula at the top, 10% plus 10% plus 10% plus 70%, equals 100%. And I think this is a good example of the kind of budget we might want to consider having. The first 10%, who you think gets that? God gets that. He comes first. And then the second 10% would be short-term savings. Now that's where your emergency fund would come in. You would have you would save until you had your emergency fund and continue to save 10%, and you could use the excess in that account to buy automobiles or buy major repairs on your house or those big expenses that come up. Then the third 10% would be your long-term savings, and that's money that you never touch until you're ready to use it. If you're going to buy a house, you've got to save for the long term for that, or maybe you want to start a business, or you're saving for your child's college education, or, of course, we all need to save for our retirement. So that's long-term savings that should never be touched. I remember I had a 403B where I worked, which was an annuity. Annuities are sold by insurance companies. And it was a tax-sheltered investment, which meant any contributions I made were tax-sheltered. So if I put, let's say I put $5,000 a year in there, when I got my W-2 at the beginning of the year, it would not show my full salary. It would show my salary less the contribution that I made. So I only paid taxes on what was left. So it was a big tax break. And then the school system contributed to that instead of Social Security. I remember one year walking up to the office and going to the conference room to talk to the man who was our representative from the annuity. And when I walked in, it was the first week in December, and he said, "Well, I guess you're here to borrow money." And I said, "What? Borrow money?" And he said, "Well, yeah, are you going to borrow money out of your account to buy for Christmas?" And I said, "Why would I do that?" And he pointed to a stack of folders this high on his desk of all the teachers who had come in to withdraw money from their 403B, their retirement program, to buy Christmas presents. And I said, "Didn't you tell them?" And he said, "Yes," but he finished the sentence for me. He said, "Yes, I told them they would have to pay taxes on it plus a 10% penalty." And they said, "Well, we have to have the money." So that's some of the foolish thinking that we do. Just because you've got a college degree doesn't mean that you're exempt from being a fool. Now, let's look at one other formula, and I didn't write that one on the board, and it's called the Rule of 72. The Rule of 72 gives you an idea of how long it would take you to double your money. So think about what your rate of return is. Now, remember, we talked about the power of compounding interest. It's principal times rate times time equals interest. So the things that affect how much we get to save or how much we put in, but that's not nearly as important as the rate of return and how long we leave it there. The Rule of 72 says that if you take the interest rate and divide it into 72, that's how long it will take you to double your money. So if you were getting a 4% rate of return, if you divide 4 into 72, that's 18, it would take you 18 years to double your money. But if you got an 8% rate of return, 8 into 72 is 9, it would take you 9 years to double your money. And if you were fortunate enough to get a 12% rate of return, then 12 into 72 is 6 years to double your money. Now, y'all think 12% is impossible. It's not impossible. Did you know that the average return in the stock market since its inception is 11.65%? Okay. There are two other things in addition to the rate of return and time that impact our savings, our long-term savings, and that is inflation and taxes. And those are the two things that have the greatest impact on them. We've got to find a way to beat the rate of inflation and also think about the tax implications. Now, if those of you who are my age or older, you know about inflation. I can remember as a young girl, my mother and my aunt dropping the kids off at the movies on Saturday morning. You probably wouldn't do that today, but back then it was pretty safe. And each one of us got a quarter, 15 cents for the movie, a nickel for the popcorn, and a nickel for the Coke. And I can remember buying an ice cream cone for a nickel. My dad worked for McDonald's when I was in high school, and they sold hamburgers for 15 cents. How many of you remember the 15-cent hamburger? Been a long time ago. Well, inflation eats up a lot of our savings. In the 90 years that they've kept records on inflation, the average inflation rate per year was 3.3%. Okay? Since 1972, the average inflation rate is 4.78%, almost 5%. I checked online this week and found out that the average rate of inflation for the month of May of this year was 3.6%. Now, for years, I've heard people talk about the money they have in their CDs. Historically, CDs have paid a wide range of rates, all the way from a fourth of 1% to 6%. And I checked at the Federal Reserve keeps records of what CDs, three-month CDs, are going for. In the month of May, three-month CDs, or actually this year, three-month CDs are getting 0.305% interest, less than a third of 1%. So if inflation is around 3%, and we're not even making 1% on a CD, are we making any money? No, I don't think so. I think we're losing money. So you've got to think about inflation, and you need to have long-term savings. I'm not talking about the short term, the first 10%. I'm talking about the last 10%. You need to have that in something that is going to beat the rate of inflation. And then if you had one of those CDs and earned that little bit of interest on it, then you've got to pay taxes on it. So you might want to consider an investment that is tax sheltered that gives you a break on taxes. Now, I said that the stock market has averaged between 11 and 12%. And haven't we had some really hard times in the stock market? Yes. Of course, 1929, the stock market crashed and ushered in the Great Depression. 1973 was another major downturn. 1987 was a huge downturn. And in 2008, we had a huge downturn. But did you realize that last year the stock market increased? Dow Jones went up 13.8% last year, even though the last few years have been pretty bad. I want you to think about the difference between speculating in the stock market and investing in the stock market. Speculating is when you're trying to time the market and buy when it's low and then sell when it's high and you're jumping in and out of the market. That's not the same thing as investing. Investing, you're putting the money in there and you're leaving it for a period of time. Now, right now we're in a really crisis right now in the U.S. economy, and the next few days may make the market go really down, or possibly up, but probably down. And when that happens, a lot of people will jump out of the market because they just panic. Well, if you put your money in some stable companies, you're not likely over the long run to lose money. Now, the kinds of companies I'm talking about are large, stable companies. It's great if you can buy a stock that you actually understand. I mean, who wouldn't understand Coca-Cola? I mean, we sort of know what Coke does. And how has Coke done? Astronomical. Since 1887, they've made astronomical profits. In the past, the last decade, for 10 years, from 2000 to 2010, Coke made 13.3% in capital gains and 2.9% in dividends, for a total of 16.2% annual profit on Coke for one decade. Now, what is capital gains? I've got that here. Capital gains is the increase in the value of the stock. And dividends, that's money that they pay you for your share of stock. Now, some businesses may pay dividends and have capital gains. Some businesses don't even pay dividends. Does that mean they're bad? No, I wouldn't say that Microsoft is a bad stock to own. They don't pay any dividends at all. You get all your money that you earn is going to be in the way of in the form of capital gains. Well, I wish that I could have talked to my dad more before he did some of the things he did, because he invested money in the 70s and lost some money during that 73 downturn. And then when Dad and Mom retired in the 1980s, I lived in the Atlanta area for years, but they had lived 10 years in Ocala, Florida, so they decided they would retire to South Florida. They moved to Punta Gorda, Florida, and bought a house. They had their life savings, and then they had their Social Security checks. Dad put 20% down on a house and mortgaged the rest. He had enough money to pay cash for the house, and he took their entire life savings and invested it in the stock market. I wouldn't say that he invested it. I think he speculated in it, because Dad bought not large cap companies like I described, these ones that have been around for years and years and years. He bought small caps, which are small companies that are growing companies, and you can make really big profits with small caps. But you can also lose your shirt in small caps. And then we had another huge economic downturn in 1987, and he lost 90%. See, he had no time left to get that money back. So there was very little time to get the money back. So I don't think you take money that you have to live on and just put it all in speculative stocks. Not a good idea. Proverbs 17:12 says, "Better to meet a bear robbed of her cubs than a fool in his folly." And Proverbs 28:20 says, "A faithful man will be richly blessed, but one eager to get rich will not go unpunished." And Dad did something very foolish. He speculated in the stock market. He used money he needed to live on, and he put all of his eggs in one basket. And I contrast that him with his brother. His brother had investments in a number of different places. One of the places he had, and it was not money he actually invested himself, his father-in-law years ago gave him $5,000 in stock in a bank. And Uncle Sid said he never really paid any attention to what it was worth. You know, most people track their stocks and, you know, have an idea of what they've got. And he never even looked to see. But he held on to it for 20 years. And 20 years later, he decides he'll check to see if his $5,000 is worth very much. And it was worth $500,000. He did pretty well. But I think my favorite stock market story, this one's in your lesson, is Ann Schieber. Ann Schieber was this spinster lady from New York State. She worked for the IRS, and she was extremely, I've read a number of stories about her, she was extremely intelligent, but she was almost friendless. She was totally estranged from her family and really had no friends. But in 1945, she invested her entire life savings, $5,000 in the stock market. And then no one really knew her very well. She retired fairly young, and she really had no friends, and she was estranged from her family, so really nobody knew anything about her. But she sure made some news when she died. She died in 1995, and she left her estate to Yestava College in New York State. And I thought what she did was great. She left all of her money to women who are going to college. So it was for scholarships for women. And her estate was worth $22.3 million. She invested in large, stable companies. She earned an average of 18.3% on her investments. And think about these companies, Coke and Pepsi. You know, we all know what those are. Paramount Pictures and Columbia Pictures. And then in the medical profession, Shearing Plough and Bristol-Myers Squibb. So when she died, she became a pretty famous lady. I said the Dow has increased 13.8% in last year. But in the last 5 years, it's increased only 4.2% because we've had a pretty big downturn. But since its inception, the Dow has averaged almost 12%, 11.65%. Ibbotson Research says that if you look at just five-year periods of the Dow and the S&P, 97% of those five-year periods have made money, and 100% of 15-year periods have made money. But people who don't understand the market jump in and out in a downturn, and they buy, you know, if something's on sale, that's when you buy it, right? Well, when the market goes way down, that's the time to buy. But most people panic and sell in a downturn, and that's how they lose. Okay, we're going to talk about some terms, the ones that are on the board. The first one is an IRA, and that stands for an individual retirement account. If you are 70 and a half or under, you can invest up to $5,000 per person. If you're married, then you can invest $10,000. And it started out, I think, at $2,000, then it went up to $3,000, and it's now $5,000. And the nice thing about an individual retirement account is that it's tax deductible. So if you put that $5,000 a year into it, and let's say you made $50,000 a year and you invested $5,000, then you would pay taxes on $45,000 rather than $50,000. So it's a very nice way to save. There is a Roth IRA, and those of you who are young, I think Roth is great, but it's really good for a young person. If you have a Roth IRA, it doesn't work like a regular IRA because you don't get that tax break. You go ahead and pay your taxes on the money. You can contribute up to $5,000 per year per person. And you go ahead and pay your taxes on it. And then you can let it sit there and earn and earn and earn and earn. And when you take it out, guess what? You don't have to pay any taxes. That is a great deal. Because if you've got a regular IRA, you get the tax break putting it in, but you don't get it taken out. When you take it out, you have to pay taxes on it. So just think about how much a Roth account could increase if you started when you're young. And then when you take it out, you don't have to worry about paying any taxes on it. Now, let me give you an example. Let's say you invested $3,000 a year for 90 years. How much would that be? How much total principal would you have? $3,000 a year not 90 years, 30 years. I've already told you the answer. $3,000 a year for 30 years would be $90,000. If you were to get the average in the stock market, 12%, then at the end of those 30 years, you would have $873,000. And almost all of it would be profit, $783,000 in profit, totally tax-free. So I think the Roth is certainly a good way to go. A 401k, you've probably heard of a 401k, that's called a pre-tax savings plan. It's for employees of businesses. And you can contribute up to these right here that I've got in brackets. You can contribute, now the maximum contribution is $16,500 per year. You can withdraw it anytime you want to, but it's not a wise thing to do. Because you have to be 59 and a half to start withdrawing without any penalties. And that's what those teachers that I work with were doing. They were withdrawing from their 403B, and they had to pay 10% penalty plus taxes on the money they withdrew. Of course, they lose all that investment, too. You can actually borrow on one of these accounts. I wouldn't recommend doing it. It is at a fairly low interest rate, but I wouldn't recommend borrowing against your retirement. And then lots of companies match funds. For example, I've known people that had companies, that they worked for a big company that would literally match dollar for dollar. How could you get a better deal than that? And then there are people that never take advantage of that. Where my husband worked, they would match up to 3%. So he could put in his 3 and they would match it with 3 more. He could put in more than that, up to 16.5 is what you can put. But the company he worked for would match 3% of it. A 403B is a tax-deferred annuity. Annuities are is sold by an insurance company, and that's for teachers and hospital workers, and maybe there's some other people, but that's the main ones it's for. And by the way, when you invest in one of these programs, you can choose how you want to put your money in. You can choose a fixed account. You can put it in mutual funds, different kinds of stocks, and we're going to talk in a minute about mutual funds and what they are. A 457B is a tax-deferred annuity for local and state government workers. A keyhole plan is for self-employed people, and then the thrift savings account is for civil service employees. And there's a new one. This one's fairly new, and I really think this is a great one. It's called an educational savings account, or an ESA, and this one works similar to a Roth. It's when you're saving money for your child's college education, and the money is not tax sheltered, but no matter what you earn on the money, you get to keep it all when you take it out. So I think that is a great way to save for your child's college education. And let's see, what have we not covered? We talked about dividends and capital gains, diversification. Diversification is something that is really important because the market is divided into different sectors. You have like the retail sector, and then you have the medical sector, and then you have food sector and utilities sector. Well, it's good to divide your money into different sectors because when one of them goes down, hopefully the other one will go up and it'll sort of average out. So diversification is very important when you invest. Mutual funds. A mutual fund is a fund that's mutually funded. It is a group of stocks and bonds, anywhere from 50 to 200. And you can invest your money into a mutual fund. Now, it's not like going out and buying an individual company. Now, you can go out and buy Coke, for example, and you could do that on your own. I don't know if Coke sells directly. A lot of companies do sell directly, and some of them don't. You could probably buy directly from Coke, or you could go through a discount broker like you've heard of E-Trade and Scottrade and Charles Schwab. Those are some of the famous ones. And they are discount brokers, so they don't really offer any advice. You could just buy from them for a small fee. Or you could go to a full-service broker and get advice too. But the idea behind a mutual fund is that it's mutually funded by a lot of people are buying into it, and they're buying anywhere from 50 to 200 different types of stocks and bonds. And they are someone else is managing your money for you. Now, you can buy your own stocks. I've never felt confident about doing that because I don't want to spend the time it takes to track them and do all that kind of stuff. And some people just buy only like Coke and some really big ones and they're fine. But I've never done that. I've always had my money in mutual funds. And it is managed by one person or a team of people. And the idea is that you're hiring professionals to manage your money for you. And they charge a management fee. So probably mutual funds are very good. They're very, very popular. But they're probably not going to get you quite as much as if you invested in stocks on your own. And they don't usually match the Dow in the increase. Probably the two most famous mutual fund managers were Peter Lynch and Sir John Templeton. Peter Lynch had the Magellan Fund. You remember, any of you remember the Magellan Fund? And Sir John Templeton, you've probably heard of Templeton Funds. You hear that on television a lot. Peter Lynch averaged 29% return on his investment in Magellan. And Sir John Templeton, a very devout man, his returns on the Templeton funds were in the 20s, low 20s. That's a pretty good rate of return. All right, dollar cost averaging. Let's say you wanted to just take $10,000 and stick it in the stock market. Well, wow. How do you know when to put it in there? Because, you know, the market goes up and down. Well, if you could do an automatic savings plan, that would be dollar cost averaging because what you would be doing is putting some money every month into a savings account. And if you do it month after month after month, you're putting a small amount in every month, and over the long haul, it's going to average out. It's going to average out. You don't have to time it with the market. But if you take a big chunk and put it in there, you're going to have to time it and hopefully get it right. And, you know, even the experts don't know what's right. An automatic savings plan is just an automatic way of putting money into savings. I found out the best way for me, before I found out about payroll savings, I would get paid and then I would say, okay, I'm going to put so much, such and such, you know, and I'm going to save this amount. And then on the way to the bank, I would find some way to spend it. But my theory is, if you haven't seen it, you really don't miss it. So I started taking money out through payroll savings, and what I didn't see, I didn't miss. So it's a great way to do it. But you can have a bank or you can have an investment company do the same thing and take a certain amount of money out of your account every month. Now, we've talked about how rich people think differently than us middle-class folks and poor folks. And one of the things that they do that's different from the middle class and the poor is that they don't mind paying for good advice. They will hire the best CPAs, the best real estate attorneys, and the best financial advisors. And I think that's probably a pretty good idea. You really get what you pay for. Proverbs 11:14 says, where there are advisors, and that's, I don't think that one's in your lesson. Where there are advisors, the people fall. But in the multitude of advisors, there is safety. So I think in conclusion to our lesson tonight, we could say that we need to invest. We need to try to make our investment. If you can do it, save more than 10%. I think in his book, Dave Ramsey says save at least 15%. And when you do, you've got to think about other things that can affect your savings, of those things, the different types of risk. You know, there's the risk that you can lose your principal, the amount that you put in. But there's also the risk of inflation eating your earnings on it, and taxes taking too much of what you've earned. So how much do I keep after taxes? That's another important question to ask yourself. I can't believe I actually finished on time. Any questions? I didn't think I would get through. Okay.
Marie,
all right.
You said that Roth IRAs are good for young people.
Well,
how young are you talking about?
Well, I think they're good for anybody, but they're great for the young people because, see, at my age, by the time they came out with Roth, I was already in my 50s. And, you know, it's never too late. But if I had started when I was really young, it would be great to be able to earn all that interest and then not have to pay any taxes on it. But yeah, lots of older people buy Roth accounts. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first 10% is related to God, and the second 10% is long-term.
Short-term savings, short-term. Third is long-term savings, and then what do you live on? You live on 70% of your income, and we already know from what we've studied before, something like 77% of people are living from paycheck to paycheck. And I'll have that formula is not in this lesson, but it'll be in lesson 8. We're also going to have next week we're going to have a lesson on giving, and then a lesson on purchasing insurance. Not a real exciting topic, but it's a place where you can save a good bit of money if you pay attention to what you're doing. And then we'll have a lesson on budgeting and banking. We're actually going to work some problems in our banking class. We're going to talk about how to balance your bank statement either once a month when you get a bank statement for the bank, or doing it online. And we're going to actually prepare a budget too. So we'll have everybody will need to bring calculators and pencils for that. And then our last lesson, if we get to do a ninth one, will be on purchasing, making small purchases and large purchases. If you know somebody who's not here tonight because they're at camp or whatever, be sure to tell them to pick up their lessons 5 and 6. Did everybody get lessons 5 and 6? Okay, we'll see you next week.